I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is Meet the CIO, the monthly show from Tech Central, where we talk not to technology vendors, but rather to the end users of IT, the banks, the retailers, and the manufacturers and other companies, about how they're using modern technology to power their businesses and drive their strategic agendas. Meet the CIO is proudly presented by Wipro, and we thank the team at Wipro for helping bring you these exciting interviews. You can learn more about Wipro at wipro.com. Go check them out. Now, our next guest on Meet the CIO is Jörg Fischer. Jörg is CIO at Standard Bank Group. Jörg, it's good to see you. Welcome to the studio.
Great, Duncan. Thanks for having me. It's great being here. Awesome.
It's a pleasure. We were just chatting before we started recording, and Standard Bank Group is actually the biggest spender on IT anywhere in the African continent.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, I haven't got all the facts behind it, but I can definitely look at it from a South African banking perspective and just chatting to our organization. I mean, we run a technology shop of about 5,500 people. That's permanent employees. If you think about it, we must probably got another 2,000 to 3,000 sort of third parties working for us. And then I think we spend around $24 billion a year on technology. That's all inclusive, people, software, includes amortization.
Yeah,
and but Standard Bank's a big organization. We represented, or we work on at least 22 countries on the African continent. And yeah, we operate through 4 business units. Yeah. So it's big.
But 5,500 full-time employees, that's a large organization on its own.
Yeah.
Never mind the whole rest of the group. So you must be a busy man.
I mean, ultimately is I've got great people working for myself. So from a technology perspective, we very much followed the structure from an organization perspective. Mm-hmm. So I say is we operate through 4 business units, our corporate investment bank, our business and commercial bank, our retail bank, which we call personal private banking, and then our insurance asset management, which Liberty is part of that. So I've got sort of a 4 CIOs, which actually operate sort of, call it both business units, even sort of quite separately.
Right.
And then I also got a CIO that looks after our corporate functions, which would be HR, finance, risk. So I operate generally down like through those 5 CIOs. Obviously, I've got quite a bit of a center team that looks at more at the standards for governance oversight. But yeah, but the people sit with those, and we're very much sort of business unit led in respect of sort of driving business unit outcomes.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we're going to get into some of the detail of that. But I wanted to chat a little bit about you before we get into Standard Bank. You studied accounting. You're a CA by training. How did you get into IT?
Yeah, let me maybe start maybe a bit of history about myself.
Sure.
So I think for me always the most important thing is. I'm a husband, married to Helga, 27 years, and I got two lovely boys, sort of Ethan and Cameron, who are currently in the UK. Ethan's just started working, and Cameron's still finishing off his studies in the UK. So how did I get into IT? So I've been with a group for 27 years. I started off as a chartered accountant. I did my articles at Ernst & Young. Prior to that, I studied here at Wits. I stayed on after articles at Ernst & Young. And then sort of I joined the bank. In those days, it was Standard Corporate Merchant Bank, so which is CRB nowadays. I started very much in the finance area. About 2000, after the attempted Nedbank sort of failed takeover,
I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, I remember a very, very sort of important event actually shaped my career quite a lot. And then I moved over to be the CFO of a retail bank. And also the interesting thing, when I was involved in the retail bank, I got involved in quite a lot of technology contracts. And that's really, I think, where my passion for technology started. My then sort of call it CEO of a retail bank, guy called Peter Wittenhood, he always asked me, what's my next? What would I like to do? So I did show an interest in technology. And I guess life's all about timing. I think it's also about luck. And then CIO retired. And then
Who was that? That
was a guy called Ray Holthausen.
He
was most probably like 63, 65. He carried on sort of being with tickets. I took over from Ray from a technology perspective. I do acknowledge, I came in as a chartered accountant. Why was I given the role? I think the main thing was to bring technology closer to the business. So being the CFO, I understood the business quite well. It was about bringing a bit of a commercial flavor to it, and it's not about having technology by its side. But yeah, like how does technology blend into business from a commercial perspective? I think I generally have good leadership people skills. So that was also very important. And I think it was about that. It wasn't just about sort of knowing tech. I mean, then there was a great technology team in place. And over time, I was there till about 2011, like in that role, and I learned a lot. I mean, just to share, I also took some private lessons at ENISA about technology. So every Friday afternoon or on the weekend, I drove to Pretoria and I had about 3 or 4 hours lessons by this private tutoring. Wow. And I think the important thing is to know the right questions to ask. So you need to know enough. But I mean, our technology shop is so big that obviously we've got specialists. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it's important for me to understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I must say, I love it.
Okay. Have you always had a passion for tech, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, my family sometimes will debate it nowadays because I'm not always up to date with gadgets,
okay.
Which I always thought I was. But I mean, tech's not about gadgets. But yeah, I always thought, you know, like it's something which is very central in banking. Mm-hmm. And it really sort of made me tick.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a bit about the role of a CIO in a large bank and how it perhaps differs from CIOs in other industries. I mean, you're a very regulated industry, so yeah. I imagine that you work a lot with regulators.
Yeah, so I'll start off, so definitely from a regulation perspective, but it's most probably unfair for me to comment on what's different, but I can just say, I think as a CIO in a financial institution, you've got to be quite resilient.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that happens on a daily basis. You also inferred, you know, like Standard Bank Technology Shop's quite big.
Mm.
There are many projects happening at the same time. There are occasionally stability issues and all of that. So the focus is quite required. But I guess what's different is just the reliance of a bank on their technology. So if I maybe break it down very simple by saying the way I look at it, you got a corporate investment bank, global market sits in there. When you think about the billions of transactions or value which gets processed every single day, I mean, in nanoseconds.
Mm-hmm.
So technology, geez, is absolutely key to that. When you think about all the corporate payments which get made on a daily basis, I think we settle about 30 to 40% of a South African market. So if it doesn't work, trust me.
It's a big problem.
It's a big problem. Mm-hmm. You know about it. I mean, when you look from a retail banking perspective, I look at it just from a coverage perspective, the hundreds of branches which we run in South Africa and on the continent, the ATMs.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, when you think about all our digital platforms, I mean, sort of the people that log onto our app, the people that log onto internet banking, I think we have something like 100 million logons a month on our mobile app.
Wow.
So if it doesn't work for a few seconds, people know about it.
Yeah. And it's headlines.
And it's definitely headlines. Mm. And it is about just how do you go about it, cool, calm, collected, sort of how do you manage it. But the issue is you've got to really be on the forefront, anticipate these things. And
yeah.
If things happen, it's about your recovery time to us. And I say maybe that's slightly different to other organizations, but it would be wrong for me to comment.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think the reliance.
It's mission critical.
Of a bank on the technology is if it doesn't work, people know about
it. Yeah. So do you have a dashboard where you can see everything that's going on in the bank at any given time?
Absolutely. We do have one. It's actually quite interesting. Everyone expects like walk into a command center, flashy lights, everything. We do have that.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually in Simon Street. But to be honest, I can pull my laptop out.
Yeah.
And we got and we got a dashboard, and I can very much look at it from home, or I can look at it, you know, like if I'm at work and all that. But the way we operate is I very much operate through the teams, you know, like it's their accountability, their responsibility, and I get notified very quickly of instances. But I must say, there's one app which doesn't belong to us, Down Detector. Now, Down Detector is an actual fact, is an incredible that it also tells you very quickly
if there's a problem,
something.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I don't like it. I mean, it has showed us up a couple of times. I think it's actually quite good. So I often just sneak at that and going, oh, is my team really telling me what's happening? But yeah, I mean, we do have, we got so much observability.
Yes.
Which is obviously built in our systems.
Were you guys impacted at all by the recent CrowdStrike incident?
quite interesting, just a bit of personal. So I was actually on leave in Portugal and I suddenly woke up. I mean, it was this big chaos. So I connected with work. Luckily, we don't use CrowdStrike. It's most probably more by luck. We're very much a Microsoft shop. So we've gone that. Most probably the second choice would have been CrowdStrike and we would have been impacted. But the short answer was, we weren't, but you can't believe how many people phoned me and how many, and I had to spend the morning just talking to teams and actually, because we had a lot of inquiries.
Yes.
So it was a lot of dealing with noise, but we weren't really impacted. Some of our feeds were impacted, but we as an organization
very minimal.
Weren't. But it's maybe again more luck because we chose a different technology choice. But again, what we've done is subsequently, we like using these events as learnings. Mm-hmm. And I sort of got my team together and all of that and said, if this was us, let's just make sure, would we have known what to do?
Mm.
And I think that's the important thing about the proactiveness of just looking at these things. Because it will happen to you.
Do you think do you think the world has become too interconnected and that there's just too many interdependencies in the world of cloud computing today it really had a big impact on some South African organizations. One of your competitors was offline for hours. Delta Airlines seemed to have the biggest impact. But do you think the world has become too interconnected?
Most probably yes. I mean, maybe people don't like me saying that. And you know, obviously, that's also where the regulator gets involved with us to really manage concentration risk. Do we have our own DR plans, our business resilience plans, and. But I would argue because you must probably looking at nowadays more as technology as a service. I mean, we're all using cloud computing, and I think cloud computing is great. It's actually the right way to go when you look at these services. We use them as software as a service. So definitely your concentration risk does increase, but it is actually up to us to make sure that we've got adequate business resilience behind it and sort of you've got to play those scenarios out and just sort of think what happens. Mm-hmm. So you've got to actually plan for the worst and then hopefully get rid of these single points of failures.
Yeah.
But your answer is it more interconnected? It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Now, Standard Bank went through some instability issues of its own a few years ago, and that did make the headlines. There was downtime, I think, on repeated occasions, and I think your appointment was actually related to coming in to fix some of those issues. Maybe just take us briefly through why there was that instability in your IT systems and what you did to fix the problem.
Yeah. If I reflect back, and you're right, sort of, I was very much more involved in operations and running real estate. I mean, we had some, call it organizational changes and some people changes. And then I very much came back there as a CIO. Most probably reflecting back is that a lot of, even the board asks you these questions and everyone would love an answer by saying it's this tech.
Right.
Or it's this server, or it's that. And it's actually not as simple as that. It's really, I talk about, we run 2,500 applications, maybe something not to be proud of. Mm-hmm. But when you think about 4 business units, 22 countries, and. So it's a very complicated, integrated technology landscape. And when you look at it all the way from the application side all the way down to the infrastructure side. So often something went wrong and it just had a bigger impact. Mm. To the organization, often our app or our internet banking would sort of limp along at month end. Some of that was capacity issues, which weren't really thought about. Sometimes changes happened and they had downstream impacts. So most probably what I can say, what did I concentrate on? For me, the first thing is what I tried to do is very much work on the people aspect, the culture. And it was about, as simple as stuff, I call it sort of back to basics. And it was about giving the teams a bit of a comfort space of saying, guys, we're actually one team. I don't care if you work in software engineering or infrastructure, or you work in this part of the bank or this part of the bank. We're all impacted and we work as a team. The other thing is the comfort of being able to escalate issues. What I often find with technology people, and I don't know if you've come across it, is always it will be fixed in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And often people make, I wouldn't call them mistakes, innocent mistakes, but they try and cover it up, and it gets worse and worse and worse. So I really encourage people speaking up And it's about sort of, let's escalate fast.
Mm-hmm.
And like, let's really, and you talk about sort of, how do I get access to what's wrong? We very much put a system in place. Let's tell people about it. And then the other thing is what I found with technology people is, I always call it, they didn't take admin serious.
Okay.
So they didn't like the whole admin part behind their jobs of, you know, like the paperwork behind it. Is it properly tested? Do we go to the right committee? So I think the first step, what it is, I brought a lot of discipline in. A lot of discipline of how we go about doing things on a day-to-day basis. Elevated the voice of the engineer. And for me, it was very much about our engineers are the important people. It's not management. Like, I'm not important at Standard Bank. In actual fact, the engineers are important. They really manage the systems on a daily basis, giving that comfort, giving them the platform to speak. I mean, you always ask by saying, is, you know, like, where do I spend my time? So, for example, I run a weekly stability meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I just had one by coincidence this morning. And I get the senior team together plus others, and we talk about all the incidences in the week and what happened. And what I try to do is turn this into more of a learning culture versus an accusation culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more about, okay, let's understand what went wrong and let's learn from it. Let's be proactive. Can we maybe share it with another country? And. So I brought that into place. So I then also got something like a root cause analysis afterwards, which says, you know, like, let's use those platforms for other people to learn. And if things needs to be fixed, let's actually document it and let's follow up on that. So again, discipline. We spent a lot of time with our vendors. I'm a firm believer in like, your vendors are your partners. And this is not about legal contracts and. So, you know, we spend a lot of money with our international vendors. We spend a lot of time with them. And for me, it was about, how do you make sure that you got your best people working for us? And the same thing, I mean, I built such a great relationship. I mean, I don't like calling vendors' names out, but for example, we run a big mainframe. I mean, every bank runs a big mainframe. So it's IBM.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can nowadays talk to the head of mainframes in Poughkeepsie, and whenever I need help, in actual fact, there's a direct line there. So you've got to spend a lot of time, you know, like, building up those relationships on the system. So those are, you know, like, some of the things. I mean, obviously, technology-wise, just understanding our blast radius, understanding our capacity management. But what's probably what I'm getting to is, it's not one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, look, we've had incredible success. And I'm not saying is we will never have outages. We will have outages. For me, the main thing was, how do we actually, how quickly do we detect it?
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly do we solve it? So for me, that's the important system which is put in place. I mean, like, even yesterday, I mean, I don't think most people knew. Our app didn't work for about 5 minutes, but it was resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like the whole day, but we knew this morning I had the meeting, we knew exactly what the issue was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about those things, about, you know, like, as I say, we call them sort of our incidences, it reduced by at least 70%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's about learning.
So it wasn't a problem with your technology platforms. It was more an issue of culture that needed to be changed.
It's most probably culture. I mean, some things of most probably how our technologies were speaking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say that there was a problem with our card system or our core banking system or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it was more our biggest challenge from a Standard Bank perspective is how the systems are integrated.
Yeah.
So a lot of it had to do with that. And you ask yourself a question by saying, when internet banking goes down, why does the app go down as well? You know, like, surely we should separate them or something. So a lot of that, you know, like, we spent a lot of time on re-engineering those things. But you have to go into root cause analysis. And I always ask, you know, like, I got something which I'm going to ask five whys.
Mm.
Because the first answer you're going to get from someone is just the basic answer. And you've got to really drill down and really drill down. You've got to make people think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, also got a great story of, you know, like, one of our software engineers made a mistake about 3 or 4 weeks ago, owned up straight away, and the issue got fixed within minutes. And I actually applauded the person and I said, you know what, I actually want to really put you in front of the 5,500 people and saying, this is the behavior. Most probably previously it would have been disciplinary and all that. How dare you do that? And that's when people hide things.
Yeah.
And I think we got very much a, you know, like, be transparent,
mm-hmm.
have an open culture.
Mm-hmm. banks, and not just Anna Bank, have a lot of legacy IT. And we're seeing the emergence of so-called neobanks or digital banks in the market. How much of a problem is that legacy? How do you deal with it? How do you approach it from a Standard Bank perspective?
It's quite interesting. We have to acknowledge legacy, but I personally don't like the word legacy. Okay. But I mean, we all use it.
Sure.
But it's a kind of thing is, I always wish we could start a bank from afresh.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you chatted to Bruce and all of that. He obviously had the liberty of time to start from afresh. I mean, Standard Bank, any of the other banks, you don't have that liberty. So the kind of thing is, it's no doubt about it that our systems need modernization.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it very much so how do you actually sort of migrate the systems more to be more digitally enabled? Historically, we're batch. How do you go more to an online system? And the whole thing is about you've got to think very carefully from an architecture perspective of how you just sort of modernize your banks. I personally, a lot of advice I give people is I would spend a lot of time on your front ends.
Mm-hmm.
I think we historically maybe made a mistake, and I wouldn't call it a mistake, but we must probably spend too much time on our back ends. And I think a lot of the financial institutions spent a lot of time on their front ends. We're now spending much more time on our front end, which is what the customer sees, versus our back ends. The thing is, what's challenging nowadays is technology changes so quickly. So you've got to really think about your architecture from how agile do you really build it.
Mm.
And a lot of it is about your APIs, your integration layers, and that. So we spend a lot of time on that. But the funny thing is, you talk about sort of our one competitor which had the issue with CrowdStrike.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their systems are a legacy as well now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing how quickly it becomes legacy. So it's interesting. I know the whole topic of even our SAP core banking.
Yeah.
Big project which we had, but
huge project.
For me, it's about maybe SAP is also a legacy because it's been so many years. We have to modernize it. Which is obviously not as difficult nowadays as previously, but I would argue you have to be in a spiral of continuously just modernizing.
Mm. Take me back to that SAP project, because it was a massive project for the bank. I think it did run way over budget as well. But that was really about modernizing your core banking systems.
Yeah, correct.
Is that the basis of your bank now? I mean, is it all running on SAP?
Now, let me maybe talk about it, because I've got a long history at the bank.
Sure.
So I think those decisions were made 2003, 2004, as far back as that.
There was a guy called Olivain Berger.
Olivain Berger, correct,
He was CIO at the time, I think.
He sort of actually Ray reported into him, so he was more of a CIO.
Okay.
In actual fact, I worked very closely with Olivain. Actually reported into him as well for a couple of years. Great guy. But it was literally, I was a CFO, that sort of when the decision started. And it was exactly there about modernizing ourselves. We obviously analyzed various systems and we went with SAP core banking.
Mm.
I mean, I'll talk about the middle thing, but
it was a big thing at the time, though, because I think you were the first.
That's a thing. So maybe one of the learnings is maybe we try to pioneer too quickly.
Okay.
And it's the kind of thing is, SAP, we obviously ran the ERP, or we run the ERP systems and all of that. We had a great relationship with SAP. We evaluated a lot of sort of, call it technology products of which should be our replacement of core banking. We came with SAP.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the challenge in hindsight was that SAP was also developing the product.
Yes.
So on the one side, you thought, oh, great, we'll develop together. But eventually, that makes it more costly, makes it more difficult. And the thing is, it's actually not so much about your product. The thing is, in banks, it's all about your integration.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent an enormous amount of time integrating back into our channel systems, integrating back into our payment systems. And that's what really made the project quite long. The other learning was, I think I always call it, we try to solve every problem of a bank. It was always, no, SAP core banking will solve this. And I actually think, even though you always say your functional specs and all that should be very business focused, I think maybe in hindsight we overdid it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a kind of thing as I would have made it much more a technology implementation and actually built on top of it. But if you look at right now, as you're right, it is our core banking systems. Our whole, call it 99% of our retail bank customers sort of operate on core banking. It's stable. It works quite well. But I mean, it's not a secret. I mean, that cost us about 20 billion.
Yeah.
Big number over many, many years. We sort of coming to an end of the amortization, or at least for the peak of the amortization. But if I can, most probably, I would say we were at least bold enough to do it.
Yes.
In hindsight, there's a great thing of, could we have done it differently? You can always do it differently. Good luck to the other banks in this market, because they all have to modernize their core banking systems as well. So we've done it. Mm. And I think it's, everyone doesn't want to be the CIO when you go through that pain. I speak to a lot of international CIOs, and it's a very, very difficult program from legacy,
yes,
to modernize. But again, also those core banking systems nowadays have also evolved,
mm-hmm,
so much that, I can speak to many people about the learnings. I actually then moved into operations, and I sort of looked at the project very much from an operations perspective. Had a few words always with my IT colleagues, in those days. But I say, I mean, it's a great system. It works.
It's working for you now.
Yeah.
Okay. But in terms of modernization, I know you've I forget which cloud partners, it could be Microsoft and AWS, but you've embarked in recent years on a big cloud migration project. How does that tie in with your core banking, your SAP system, and maybe just talk us through that?
Let me make so the thing is, I mean, it's quite public, is we got a cloud partnership with AWS and with Amazon Azure. So with that, Google's also come to the party, but I always tell my Google friends, you've been a bit late coming to South Africa. So we got that. I mean, it's no doubt about it, is that we want to migrate as much as possible onto these hyperscalers. I really think from a computing perspective and from a storage perspective, is I don't think we in our own data centers can ever compete with what they offer.
Sure.
I mean, so it's a bit of a, in a virtual commerce, no-brainer to go that route. You've just got to be careful how you go about it. And it's not about everything what you got now, just put onto the cloud. So we've very much looked at our x86 estate, and we're in the process of migrating that quite hard to both hyperscalers. We're quite clear what goes to what. We've actually taken a choice of our customer-facing systems are more AWS, our back-office systems are more Azure. We just made that choice. I'm not saying it's a right choice. We made that choice. So we very much migrated that. And we for example, I think in our last results, I don't know if we spoke about it, but we sort of, that's probably about 44% of that journey is done, and that's the x86 mistake. Coming back to core banking and all that, so the way we're looking at modernizing our systems is that many systems going forward, so even the SAP core banking next version upgrades card, is we think that a lot of that will be born in the cloud. So the thing is, we don't want to just lift and shift and go to the cloud. In actual fact, a lot of our modernization journeys will start in the cloud. And that's how we're tackling that. But I play I focus on the commerciality behind it. Like, you mustn't just go tick, I've gone to cloud. And we really look at commerciality. But I think you've got to look at it from a client experience perspective. So for me, it's about, does it give you better stability? Does it reduce your risk? Does it reduce your cyber? And then is it at least commercially viable, at least equal? But that's where technology... That's where technology is going to. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. So you're committed to that course.
Yeah.
What happens to your core banking system? Does it stay on SAP?
I think it's no doubt about it. Our South African core banking system will remain on SAP. I mean, we're still doing that evaluation, but the next version of a core banking will be cloud enabled,
mm-hmm,
and as we do those upgrades, it will just flop to the cloud.
Yeah. But what do you see as the benefits and potential downsides of moving to the cloud? I mean, it brings a new model in terms of the way IT is paid for. It goes from a CapEx to an OpEx sort of model. What benefits does that bring to the bank, and are there any downsides to it?
So what I like is exactly that, is that I think nowadays, is because you don't have to have these massive CapEx investments in data centers, like everything that goes into your data center, that you very much swing to a pay-as-you-go model. Mm-hmm. I think the great thing about it, what these hyperscalers offer you, they offer you, you know, like variety of computing power and variety of storage. So you've got very much, much great choices which you have. A debatable point, but I'll stick to it. I think they are more resilient. When you think about it, is any of them, they run, call it free zones across South Africa, whether it's AWS or Azure. We run two data centers, so they already got one more. Plus, the nice thing about it, you can go multi-region. So you can, for example, run out of Cape Town and run out of Frankfurt or Dublin. So I just think variety of resilience perspective, if you really configure it correctly, just gives you so much more. But downfall, what you've got to be careful is must probably our learning. So you've got to be very careful about, I would argue, the commerciality. Because what can happen is your computing power can suddenly run away. Mm-hmm. So we all got the new sort of topic of FinOps. So you need a very strong FinOps area, and which we've built up tremendously. And this team has been saving us millions, really looking at the computing behind it, the storage behind it, and really looking at optimizing it. So that function for me is very important, because otherwise it will run away. And then you've just got to be careful. I mean, we spoke previously about the concentration risk. Mm-hmm. So you've got to really think about it by saying, as if something happens, what would you do? And for me, it's about, if something happened to AWS or Microsoft Azure, maybe bigger political or whatever, can you flop from one to the other? And I'm not talking you can flop in minutes, but I'm just saying is sort of how your contract's structured in respect of data ownership and all of that. How can you go across and then just really build it from scratch? I mean, we got great partnerships with both. I mean, we got some of the best international resources mm-hmm. working with us. I sit on the AWS Technology Advisory Board.
Okay.
So there's a meeting once a year in New York, I mean, in London. So I sit on their tech advisory board, the same with Microsoft. So we really work as partners. Mm-hmm. And I mean, these companies are incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever gone to reInvent, which is the AWS big thing, but you suddenly see 60,000-70,000 people there, and you start seeing, the world is really run by these tech. I mean, Microsoft's got a similar one, which is happening in October. I think it's called Ignite and all that. So it's big.
What sort of conversations do you value with IT vendors?
What I don't value is people just wanting to sell.
Okay.
What I don't value is very much a product push. Mm-hmm. And I understand we're all corporates, and I understand we all got sales targets, and I understand all of that. It's more about sort of working together with us in for a long-term benefit. So that's more what our value is, that we collectively learn on the journey. Mm-hmm. I like it when they challenge us, but the challenging mustn't be selling.
All right.
A lot of it is for me, it's about just challenge us and bring me examples of what do other organizations do, and is there anything we should learn about it? And if we've learned something now, how do we go onto that journey? And I always know things don't happen overnight.
Sure.
So for me, it's really, really that partnership. And for me, it's not about pushing sales, pushing contracts. Mm-hmm. But it's an actual fact, have they really got our interest at their heart?
So a bit of more advisory.
Yeah, sort of. And it's advisory. Yeah. And then really working great with our teams together.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I value. Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about how you work with the rest of the C-suite within Standard Bank, including the CEO. Maybe just to take us through the discussions you have with other C-level executives within Standard Bank, what drives those, and also what you value from those conversations.
Maybe a bit of sort of history, I guess. I'm lucky because I've been, again, 27 years at the organization. I used to be, when I ran operations and real estate, I used to be part of a group executive. So for me, we're all colleagues. We are familiar and we all know how to talk to each other, etc. When it comes from a technology perspective, I think for me, the most important thing, and the way I also structured our technology shop, is that we've really tried to push that we call it the group chief executive, but very much the four chief executive of the business lines, also take accountability and responsibility for their technology. So it's about how does technology enable your business And it's very much, like being from a client-centric perspective, obviously stability is important. Like where do we spending our investments on? And so it's quite interesting nowadays, instead of me just being the IT guy that gets all the blame, in actual fact, I push a bit back. And in actual fact, challenge the chief executives by saying is, are we spending our money on the right IT projects? If there are stability issues, I want, in actual fact, those areas to focus on stability issues and not deliver features. But I think they're like I'm an integral part of a team. I like challenging, and I like bringing new ideas to the forefront. Like we spoke about cloud, and it's about how do we enable your business from a cloud perspective, but look at it from a business perspective. I hate pushing technology, and we all know the new word of AI. And all that big topic, and it's the kind of thing is like how can AI actually really help your business, but then be business unit led. But those are sort of more of the discussions. I mean, ultimately, how do we make everything at an economical price point? I guess because of my CA background, I'm very much in favor of these really commercial solutions. It doesn't have to be the most sexiest solutions. But it's about, are they commercial? Are they commercial? And do they add value to our clients?
Yeah.
But I'm very much integrated in the team. I think most people at Standard Bank know me because I've been in so many roles. It's a great organization. It's a fun organization.
Yeah. So, but you've got a seat at the table and you contribute to the formulation of the strategy of the group. And
yeah, I mean, I don't sit on the group executive anymore. That our chief operating officer sits there, but... But let's put it aside, I get involved in so many meetings. I sit on the technology board. So obviously technology board is a sub-world. So I get involved in those discussions. But I mean, Sim and I chat quite often. And it's, I mean, Standard Bank's got a great open door policy. So we chat a lot.
I'm always interested in how organizations approach the topic of cybersecurity, which has become so important in recent years. And many organizations have, and I presume Standard Bank is one of them, just given its size, that they appoint a CISO who sits alongside the CEO often or reports to the CIO. What does it look like inside Standard Bank, and why have you taken the decisions you have?
So the way our CISO works, so our group CISO reports into me, but also into risk. So it's got a dual dual reporting line. I guess I'd manage sort of, I want to mention his name in case somebody wants to, in actual fact, hire him. Brilliant person. So we're one of the best in the country. Actually, the best in the country.
Better not mention his name.
but it's the kind of thing is, obviously, from a tech perspective, I work very, very closely with him and obviously spends a lot of time with the risk fraternity. If you look at just cyber itself, are we worried about it on a daily basis? Absolutely. I mean, it's a big topic worldwide. When you think about sort of from the World Economic Forum, it's definitely within the top 10 risks. It's definitely dialed up. We got about 800 to 1,000 people that just work alone in cyber security.
Wow.
We spend north of $1 billion on cyber security. We've got quite a good in-house team. But we actually work quite a lot with partners, and I did mention that we very much gone along the Microsoft sort of so security stack. But and then we got CISOs in all the business units just to make sure that from a business unit domain perspective, it's run there. But yeah, I mean it is a topic. I spend a lot of time on our cloud journey, so I expect sign off by a CISO. By saying is whatever we move to the cloud, I want the CISO sign off by saying is does it adhere to our guardrails, our standards, but it's an integral function in the bank, very, very important. Definitely, I wouldn't say getting more focus. I mean, it's always had focus, but it's if you had to ask me what keeps me awake at night, and that is a bit of a cliche always, definitely cybersecurity, because the thing is you just don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there are most probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people on a daily basis trying to infiltrate your systems. And it's that. I often say to our team and to the executive team, it's maybe it's a timing issue, and we should rather concentrate on how would we respond. Have you got, and I spend a lot of time with other CISOs, just international ones, just to learn from their incidences. And sort of say, okay, how did you handle it? Because there's a lot of stakeholder management, regulatory management, and that. But you've got a brilliant team there. I mean, on the last year when we were sort of got a few awards at for CIO SA, we got the cybersecurity award. So well done to that team.
Okay. So tell me, Jörg, what in your view makes a good CIO in 2024? And what do you think are the skills that are most important for a CIO to possess from both a professional perspective and in terms of the soft skills and in terms of dealing with people?
Yeah. Look, again, take it from where I'm coming from. So I haven't grown up in technology being a software engineer. So maybe I'll be a bit biased towards it, but I do think, I think the days of a CIO just growing up from being a software engineer and then suddenly being a CIO, I personally think that's not good enough. Mm-hmm. So for me, the important thing is, do you really understand the business? And do you understand the industry you're in? I may be a bit biased, but I actually think for an external CIO to maybe come into banking to understand banking is quite difficult. And I would maybe, if I went into retailing or whatever, so I would argue that you really need to understand the industry, you really need to understand the organization, because it's so complex, and you need to understand what does the organization want to achieve.
Yeah.
So for me, a lot of it about technology nowadays is all about the customer. It's not about the tech. Mm-hmm. It's about, how do we really satisfy the customer? Give them time back, do things easier, are resilient, are stable, are always there, trustworthy. So I think if you've really got to understand that, then I do think you've got to understand the new stuff happening. And some of it is, I wouldn't call it it's hype, but you've got to manage the hype, because everyone goes suddenly to Davos and there's a new topic. Like years ago it was cloud, now it's AI. And you've got to really sort of manage those topics, and you've got to, I would argue, educate the organization in sort of bringing those new topics. And as I mentioned, and you've got to challenge the organization by saying, as historically we used to do things like this, but how can we look at things differently? I think risk management is quite important. Obviously banking highly regulated and that, but you've got to look at potentially what are the vulnerabilities from a technology perspective, and you can't be defensive about it. You've got to really, really think about it, sort of the whole risk management fraternity behind it. We spoke, you asked me about sort of, I think you've got to be an integrator, collaborator. You've got to really understand how to talk to the C-suite, how to talk to the board. It can't be complex tech speak. You've got to really take complex matters and simplify them. And again, talk about it. What does it do from a business perspective? I can carry on and carry on.
You need to be a good all-rounder by the sounds of it.
But it's definitely, you've got to do that. And then I would argue you've got to have good people skill. You spend a lot of time with your staff. You've got to lead them. You've got to motivate them. Technology is not always an easy job. You got outages, and trust me, no one actually wants an outage. But you've got to also protect the team. So a lot of my role is to be a bit cool and calm and collected with the team. While the C-suite shouts, I'll take the blame. Let's protect the team to really get on with what they're supposed to be doing.
But like a coach.
And it's a kind of thing. And you've just got to motivate your staff and as said, coach them. But I must say it's a real great all round role. You really see the organization. But as I say, you need big resilience, because there's always a project that something goes wrong or something from a resilience perspective. And you've got to look at things from a big picture perspective and know when to get involved in the detail. But I think that's where it's most probably evolving from pure tech to solving business problems. And you've got to bring the technology to the forefront of solving those. My biggest worry is that technology is moving so quickly. That how do we become more and more agile? So we spoke about core banking. When we did that core banking decision, as I was in finance and all of that, we spoke about 10, 15 years. That's not what a project should have taken, but we talk about when you want to amortize these things.
Sure.
I don't think you got that liberty nowadays. AI, we didn't speak about, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
cloud we didn't speak about. So it's all these things. You know, like what is the new fit for next thing? And it's really forefront of all of us.
Yeah. I want to talk a bit about where the banking industry is going and maybe ask you to look forward 10 years if that's possible. But before we do that, how do you attract and retain talent? Because, I mean, that must be a key part of your job. And we know there are serious skill shortages in certain parts of IT, security being one of them. How does Standard Bank go about making sure it has the best people?
Yeah, so there will always be a shortage of talent. I mean, it's an interesting topic, but wherever I sit at a CIO forum in Johannesburg or wherever I sit in one in New York or in London, it's always a topic. And for me, it's the kind of thing is let's just accept it. And obviously, we've got to do something about it. Mm. But we're all moaning about it. How do I go about it and how do I look at it? And I think I use different things. I think working for the Standard Bank Technology Shop is awesome just because it's so vast. Mm. You've got four different business lines. You've got the geographies. And we really get involved in all the tech. So for me, you've got to really promote and motivate what I'm saying is if you come to technology, into Standard Bank Technology, it's actually a fact of career. It's not just a job. That's the one thing. The other thing, yeah, like we all got this working from home, working from the office and that. Hope my CEO doesn't listen to me, but I know it's recorded. But the thing is, I very much sort of said from a technology perspective is you've got to be a bit more flexible to your engineers. And what we've done is we've taken huge advantage of years ago, if you applied for a technology job at Standard Bank, it would say Johannesburg, like 7th Street or Rosebank. And I guess if we learned something about COVID was that, you know what, we've got offices in Cape Town, we've got offices in Durban. I mean, never mind our international offices. So a lot of our staff left for the Cape. Mm-hmm. So now the beauty about it is now we're getting them back. We just
Cape
is, yeah, go into that office. So we started, we learned from that thing. And then for me, it's just, you know, like it's about location, offering great location, offering great offices, offering great career opportunity. We spend an enormous amount of time and effort in training. So I really believe in training of people. We spoke about sort of a cloud and all of that. It's about how do we get them certified. Mm-hmm. And that's so the organization really offers sort of our engineers a lot of training capability. And I think it's an interesting place to work for. So I think if I put that all into the thing is we've actually been able to attract some incredible talent. Mm-hmm. And I guess sort of success breeds success. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing as come work for a great organization and come work for a great technology shop and it's fun.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. But there's no magical formula. We're all short staffed. Mm-hmm. It's not about always the pay. It's about the career you offer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's look a little bit into the future then. Let me start by asking you about some of the big projects, IT projects the Standard Bank's involved with at the moment. What are some of the things that have got you excited and are going to have a real impact on Standard Bank customers?
Yeah, so always talk about sort of IT projects. So, I mean, especially about the enormous number we spend on technology.
Yes.
There's no scientific way, but I would argue about 40 to 45% of that we actually spend on change. Mm-hmm. So that's on whether it's future project or whether it's innovation, all that. So where are we spending our money on? So definitely a lot of work is sort of spent on, call it our customer relationship systems. Again, you know, like most people know, we're on a Salesforce journey. So a lot of it is we use it very effectively in our corporate investment bank, and it was about how do we use it in our call center, servicing centers, and our relationship management. So for me, and again, you ask what are we doing for customers, it's like really understanding our customers very well. So spending a lot of money on our relationship management. The second thing is I spoke about we must probably historically spend too much money on our back end systems. So we're spending a lot of time or money on our channel system. So when you look at our app is continuously evolving. Mm-hmm. And very much, and maybe, you know, like also where are we going to? is our app will very much be more and more personalized to you. And it's about, you know, like everyone's got the next best offers and all of that, but it's about how do we make that more and more relevant to you in the app. And it's very much also working with third parties in respect of offers. So there's a lot of work continuously happening on our channel systems. In our corporate investment bank, a huge project in respect of their corporate channel system, which we call Business Online. So there's a lot of sort of money spent on that, on modernizing, or not modernizing, re-implementing that. Then I spoke about you always have to modernize your back end. So we'll have to go on a journey of, you know, like modernizing our card systems over time. We spoke about sort of SAP. So there's your back end modernization. And then you bring in, call it the sexy stuff of, you have to rethink about how does your infrastructure look like. So a lot of money being spent on cloud. And you'll see that very much our CapEx will be substituted by cloud cost.
OpEx.
Yeah. And very much sort of the AI world. But I would argue, you know, like it's relationship management, it's channel systems, and it's modernization of some of our backends to be more agile, more flexible. But the thing is, what I learned with IT is you never arrive. By the time you've, as I say, for me, the joke is by the time you've maybe arrived, that's already a legacy. And so you've got to really think about sort of from an architecture perspective is how do you stage it? So that's where you focus about. As I say, we spend a lot of, for me, where I get involved, I get a lot involved in the governance of these projects. Are they running on time? Are we spending the right money? Are we getting the business value out of it? And that's also what we report out off to the board.
Okay. I must ask about AI. It's the topic of the moment. Are you excited about generative AI? Are you using it internally?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. But I think for me, it's quite interesting. We use Gen AI and AI, and I would argue most probably 70 to 80% of the stuff everyone's doing is AI. It's not really Gen AI, but that becomes now technical. So are we busy with it? Maybe a bit of talking around it, absolutely are we busy about it, but I'll tell you how we're approaching it. So for me, the first thing was to in actual fact, educate our board about it, educate our C-suite about it by what is really this Gen AI world and our AI world. So we had a lot of those learning sessions, thanks to our partners and that. Then we've actual fact created training courses for our staff. So for me, and it's not just tech related. For me, it's like really, I think everyone in my organization should understand AI. And for me, it's not about AI taking your job away. It's about AI complementing your job and making it more efficient going forward. I mean, I came from, after IT, I went to operations and back to IT. It was amazing how we automated stuff in operations, and we were able to retrain a lot of our staff members into more value-added added work. So I view AI very much about, you know, like at the beginning, AI can do a lot of the laborious stuff and help you. So there's staff education and curiosity required. Then there is, the specific projects. I'm a firm believer in, so we from a center perspective, we very much, we know which technology to use, and I've gone very much more on an and strategy versus an or strategy. I think teams need to play around with it versus you're going to spend 1 or 2 years deciding which one, and by then it's old anyway. So we got a lot of our proof of concepts in place. I guess the challenge, and I'll be quite transparent about it, is how do we scale them more? And I'm actually going to challenge the team of much more about, I think we should work on less. And I actually think we should learn more about scaling. And then when you think about it, so I look at it three areas. The one area is, call it AI for technology. So that's very much code assistance, sort of use cases, test cases, all of that. So we're pushing that quite
hard. So this is AI to help your software developers write code.
Correct. This is AI. And I do think definitely you get an upliftment. And it's quite interesting talking to the software engineers. Some say it's 40% better. Some say it's 5% better. But to be honest, it's better. So it's about how do we adopt that more and more. So I call it AI for the technology space. Then there's AI, call it for the call it to service our clients better. And that's sort of in our service, call it in our call center, service center. I think a lot of a routine task you can definitely do with AI. So there's a lot of, call it projects and POCs happening there. Even like relationship management by saying is, I've got a meeting with X, Y, and Z. Let's try and get as much information about it. And then really, really go to the client. Where we haven't yet ventured into is I don't think we are yet totally comfortable to let just AI run to a client by itself.
Okay.
So we definitely still got quite a lot of balances in place. I call it the man in the middle. So staff assisted. So we haven't yet gone to that bold step. But I think from a technology assistance perspective, making the workforce internally more productive. We all heard about co-pilots and that. So that's happening from a servicing perspective. But yet, can you 100% interact with Standard Bank and there's some Gen A model which will give you an answer? Not yet. Will we get there? I think we get there. And where I'm working a lot is on whatever guardrails. And then all of it responsible AI. So we've got our risk people really working with us. Sort of. So one of the learnings is you've got to really bring your risk people into this very, very early. And in actual fact, work together. The last thing what you want is sort of some AI going rogue. And that, I mean, it's quite interesting. I was on one of these, I think the MasterCard Tech Advisory Board, and then one of the guys spoke, do you have a red switch? And I said, what do you mean? He says, if something goes rogue, who hits the red switch to stop it? And it's quite interesting. So I brought that back to our organization and I sort of said, like, maybe we also need to think about this by saying, if things suddenly go rogue, because you don't know new models and how do we cut it and what would be our business resilience in plan? But a very interesting topic. I think it's here. I just think, yeah, like we're not like the pioneer in it. I had the cliche of fast follower, but definitely we have to adopt it and I see a huge benefit into it. But I'm also going to be quite interested in following this whole, putting my CA and my accounting hats on and my financial hats on. I'm really interested in the valuations of these tech companies.
Right.
And it's like they've invested billions of dollars into this and...
Over $100 billion.
I think it's going to take time. It's right, but I think the adoption is going to take time. But when you think about AI, I mean, there's no ways can I offer that in our own data centers. When you think about the GPUs you need, when you think about the computing power, the storage you need, I mean, that's where you need the hyperscalers. It's a fascinating world, and we're in it. We're very close to it. I spend a lot of time on it, and I speak to a lot of international colleagues on it, not only to the vendors. I'm like, okay, now tell me, what does JP Morgan really do with this? Or what does Citibank Bank really? And you start ending up that there's a bit of poetic license being used, and we're similarly in the same. But I'm super excited about it.
Yeah.
Super excited about it.
But certainly the big winner in the short term is NVIDIA and all those GPUs it's selling into the hyperscalers.
Yeah, I mean...
Scary numbers.
I just struggled to look at those valuations, but I said, I think we had to talk about that. It's
like... Let's look a bit at the future then as we close out this discussion, Jörg. You still have a network of branches around the country. I think 10, 20 years ago, maybe you would have predicted that by the mid-2020s, those branches wouldn't exist
anymore.
Yeah,
when internet banking came, remember, the death of the bricks.
Yeah, the bricks are still there. Mm. But just given everything that's going on, I mean, we're seeing that the telco industry kind of muscling a little bit into the banking industry. Yeah. We're seeing the banking industry kind of muscling into the telco space. You guys are doing it too. You have an MVNO. And technology is moving at one heck of a pace. If you were to sort of look into your binoculars and look into the future, into your crystal ball, what do you think this industry is going to look like? If you can't do 10 years, let's go 5 years. I mean, what are the impacts going to be? How's it going to change for your customers?
Yeah, look, it's a, I mean, this is like the real crystal ball thing. And all we know is, how does that saying go? We all underestimate what's going to happen in 10 years. Even when you think about the iPhone and all of that, I think we all underestimated of how dominant it's going to be in our pockets and all the apps. But I think we all overestimate sort of the yearly jump. So it's going to be a very, very interesting world, very, very difficult to predict. We all know that technology is going to become more pervasive. I do think, John, like, so you spoke about sort of the branches. I mean, there will be less branches, but I think branches aren't going to die. I think people still would like a personal discussions, but a lot of the day-to-day transactional stuff and all that, I don't think will be done in branches.
And you don't want that done in branches.
No.
No.
But I mean, you want human contact.
Yeah.
In banking, you want human contact. But you know, like, that's going to evolve, and your branches are going to get smaller. It's quite interesting. I mean, when I'm in the UK, I hardly ever use cash fare. I never use cash fare. Mm. In South Africa, I still use a bit of cash because we've got an informal, sometimes, workforce for cargo. And I always go, when are you going to have a QR code? I can actually give you
I
my
wish money. They would do that.
there's an opportunity for a bank. But I think that's most probably where we're going to. We're going to go to a much more, I would argue, technology-dominated world, whereby, you know, from a banking perspective, you just got to continuously make it simpler and simpler for the clients to use your technology. We're all fighting for, call it, the glass space. So it's a kind of thing as if you want to go onto the Standard Bank app, I don't think it's not just going to be about banking, but it's going to be really about understanding your lifestyle, and it's going to be about offering you relevant stuff. I mean, I sometimes get really frustrated where I get these sort of push notifications to myself and saying, do you want X, Y, and Z? And I'm going, why do I want X, Y, and Z if I already got much more? So I think for financial institutions and telcos and all that got to become more accurate in respect of understanding the client. And the whole thing is I think just technology is going to become more and more, you know, like, seamless into the way people dominate. But I think one thing we've got to be careful is the human contact is still very important. And we've got to be careful. I think that's one of Standard Bank's strength is you know, like, we've got a massive client base out there. So you've got to learn, or you've got to balance that off versus just being like a digital bank. But I say, I think, as I mentioned, I mean, this whole thing of looking the past, I think you've got to be, I think you're going to buy technology more and more as a service. But I still caution sometimes our team by saying is, I still think there's a lot of things we want to own ourselves. I think our front ends and all of that we want to own. But I think the way you do upgrades and all of that is just going to happen much quicker, and it's going to be much more spontaneous. But a lot of it, as we all know, it's the fight for the data. And it's about really understanding, whether you're a retail client or banking client, or it's about understanding your client better. And I think the people that have cracked that will lead the pace, and it's about simplifying your client's life. People want time. They don't want to spend time on admin and
stuff. Bank branch.
So correct. So it's about, and I also think it's like, I mean, even when I look at retailing and I go on to the online websites and all of that, I lose quite a lot of interest and I log off if it's not easy to navigate. So I think that's you've got to fight for the person's attention and keep their attention and make it simple.
And then make it frictionless for them.
Absolutely frictionless and always on.
And always on.
And always on. But it's interesting. I mean, when you just think of, even when you think about the cars nowadays, I mean, the autonomous cars, I spent, actually I was last week in Beijing, but this was my previous visit in January. I mean, we drove through Shanghai in a car that drove by itself. In traffic, going from one lane to another lane, watching the pedestrians walk across the lanes. But I'm just saying, it's amazing where technology comes from. But my only plea is we mustn't lose the human touch. And that's for me. But I think your life's going to become simpler. You're going to be driven to work in your car. You're going to do banking on it and that. But yeah, it's going to be a very, very interesting world.
You may ask your AI chatbot to do your banking on your behalf. Please pay that bill.
I think all of us will have an AI assistant. I think all of us will have an AI assistant of just helping us with our day-to-day routines. And you're going to speak. So that's not too far away. I'm just worried that it's just going to become like too impersonal. Yeah. But interesting world. Very interesting world. Luckily, I'm closer to retirement. Look, I'm only early 50s, but it's the kind of thing. It's going to be.
You're still going to see huge change.
but it is very interesting, and that's what keeps you so exciting in this job, of just how it just changes and changes. And I just love talking to people about this, and it's. And then how do we apply that to our clients?
Well, I must thank you for coming and talking to the Tech Central audience today about Standard Bank IT. It's been a fascinating discussion. Jörg Fischer is Chief Information Officer at Standard Bank Group. Thank you so much for your time.
Excellent. It was great being here. Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you.